From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our movie today is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, as we make our way through the Planet of the Apes series. My name is Serge Dalpierre, and today we have
Heidi Hilliker
and
Tim McMillan
and
Jim Usterman.
Our cue point is, as with most films from the 70s and this series, the very beginning of the film. So I inched our way through it. I think in about 3 seconds, you start seeing the film start fading up. So basically inch your way through that and pause it there. And we'll let you do that while we go ahead and talk about Conquest of the Planet of the Apes and the Ape series, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the interesting thing about Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, and some of you who've seen the Blu-ray, is that there was actually an original ending that was recut. The studio actually pulled it back in after, I guess, from what I've read, a preview, and essentially recut the ending so it was more sympathetic and not as violent. And actually, they cut out some of the much more violent stuff, which I know Tim and I watched it a little while ago, and while it was really violent, actually, some of the blood effects were pretty damn bad. So I don't miss it that much. So the interesting thing is when we get towards the end, that the end is the significant thing that they changed, and we'll talk about that extensively as to what to look for, as to what should be there and what shouldn't be there. Also, I know I will, and Heidi will probably be looking at it and saying, oh, I know what that place is, because we're rather familiar with Century City.
Because
which
we see it almost every day.
Almost every day, and this is so we'll go like, oh, that's the bridge. Oh, yes, and then we cross it all the time. So, first times, Tim?
Well, actually, I'm a little sketchy on that. The last two installments, I'm not too, clear on as to when I first saw them. I do know that pretty much the snippets I've seen and the times I have viewed them, this series, to me, the one thing that resonates whenever I watch, especially the last two, is just a vision being victim to its budget. I just see the budgets being cut and cut and cut by the last feature. It's pretty bottom of the barrel monies at hand. So production wise, I'm not as wowed as I am as the Planet of the Apes, and actually the first Planet of the Apes blows production wise everything else away. But the vision is excellent. The vision of this is just awesome. So my favorite of the series is probably Planet and Conquest. Those are the two I'm most familiar with.
Heidi.
Well, as discussed in the previous Apes films we did, I saw everything, successive after Planet of the Apes. I saw those all in a one-day marathon. So I've seen Conquest a handful of times, and it is one of those ones that's really stuck with me, mainly because I have the familiarity of, working where it was filmed. I remember, one of the first times Serge and I ever met, we went to the farmer's market. And we went over the bridge, and we were talking about how it was the Planet of the Apes bridge. And I watched it again, right after that, because I kind of, only faintly remembered it. So actually, I've probably seen this one most recently. And even though the production value isn't as good, and it might not have the same kind of lasting quality as some of the other ones, it is one that's really stuck with me, even when I saw it as a child, because of some of the tones and the reversal of power that starts here. So, I guess that's the first and every time.
Wow. Jim?
I don't think I've seen this film for 25 years. Forever ago. And I think I saw it on television. So I don't know that what we're going to see here is what I've seen most recently. But, the Planet of the Apes movies were huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were like, ooh, I want to be a makeup artist. And so I actually, at one point, my little brother and I, we took clay and I sculpted a Planet of the Apes mask on his face. I put the clay on his face and sculpted it, and we put it in the freezer so we could put them on.
Wow.
They'd be like solid. So this was
you put the mask in the freezer or your brother?
We put the clay. I put them both in the freezer.
Oh, wow.
So they'd be solid. We put the mask, and then we'd put the masks on, and then I painted them up, but they were just frozen. Clay that wouldn't, it was like Play-Doh or something, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And so they were icy cold on our faces. But then I'm like, ooh, yeah, I want to be a makeup artist. And I went out and I actually, my parents got me this little makeup kit from Ben Nye so we could play with makeup.
Nice.
It was kind of fun. And that's actually...
The rest is history.
The rest
is,
well. Yeah, I guess. A blip. But no, the Planet of the Apes movies are awesome. I to tell you the truth, this is not my favorite, but I'm excited to see it again.
Which one's your favorite?
The creepy Beneath.
Ah.
I don't know why. Yeah. For some creepy. Reason, my memories of that are just, for one thing, totally weird and creepy and disturbing, but also there was something sexy about it to me in my memory, and I don't know what it would be.
He's got a mutant fetish.
It's disturbing.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sit closer. Come here.
Yeah, Beneath is... There is definitely a weirdness to it. What the whole thing with the mutants and the masks definitely freaked me out. But there was definitely something captivating.
Oh, sure. All are in their own way. Well, really captivating, I think.
Well, especially in the whole thing with children. Children were big fans of the ape films as they started finding out. But they were made for adults, which is what I like, as opposed to dumbing them down for kids. And definitely this is not dumbing down for kids, even though kids were the market here, which is really interesting.
Oh, really?
Oh, they recognize that kids like it, so they knew that kids would go see it, but still, right. They had their stories they were telling, and actually, I think all four sequels were written by Paul Dean. He wrote the screenplay, so he definitely had his vision going through along with the producers about what this would all be about, and especially in this one, we've seen the films, more Planet of the Apes and Beneath, Planet and Escape, have to deal with social issues of some sort, more Planet, and then Escape kind of touches it. Beneath kind of plays with some of the social issues, actually still, with militarization, that kind of thing. And then we come full circle now to flipping it around. And now we really get super social about this. And this is actually, now I remember, was part of the reason they toned down the film. Because this is all about the slaves rising up. I mean, and definitely there was a big allegory of Planet of the Apes at the time. And we have to recognize that Planet of the Apes was basically, in a way, a subtext to be seen as being the subjugation of the African-American in American society. So, in other words, it was about the African-Americans being in charge and the whites being subjugated, so to speak.
So, but, I mean, it wasn't a contemporary view. I mean, it was like,
this is what happened
in history, and now it's happening again.
It was just a way to tell a story, but that's part of what Planet of the Apes touched on. And here, that definitely was about the slaves, and this is now, what, I think, 71 or 72 or 73, 72. I don't remember. I think it's 73 at this point. And so definitely those issues are there, and I think that was part of the...
72 on that.
Okay, 72.
According to Wikipedia.
I'll trust Wikipedia.
Yeah. Why not? It's not like anybody could write anything.
Now, when I saw this, because I saw it when it came out, the next ape film is out, so we go to see the next ape film. Very, very excited. And it's like, oh, wow. I remember the ending, the other ending, the ending that got changed. So I don't know why.
I'm interested in seeing what ending I remember, because I guess I didn't know there was two different ones. And I'd seen it a few years ago, so maybe that's the one we're watching now. But I don't know which one I saw initially.
This is the one that's been shown forever. Okay. I just remember.
This is the one I probably saw on television.
This is the one pretty much everyone has seen.
That everyone sees, exactly.
But it's very rare to have seen the other one.
And the one that I saw, I remember distinctly, and sorry if I'm spoiling it for everyone, but I assume that everyone's watched this. Mm-hmm. Governor Brett gets killed at the end. The apes, they raise their rifles and they kill him. I don't know why I remember it. Maybe, I don't think there was a comics. I didn't read that. I probably read the book, but I don't remember that. I just remember that vision. So I don't know. I don't know why I thought that. So when this came out, when the Blu-ray came out and we watched it, it was like, oh, there, that's what I remember.
Well, you were a young creative. Huh. You might have said to yourself, I would have directed this differently. And what you were remembering is your vision.
Not in 72.
Come on.
This is interesting. In context to the times,
yeah.
So the time this was released,
yeah.
Did I hear from you that this was very popular in like Harlem or?
No, that wasn't me. But I mean, I don't know
that the Apes films were very popular in
maybe African American communities, and maybe they were scared of like, oh no, they'll get ideas. I'm like, okay, so
but you're saying that the Apes films have been known as being symbolic. Racially?
I think,
racial
symbolism? I definitely see the racial symbolism, the theme in there. Especially, I mean, this one, Planet of the Apes, I think that's what made Planet of the Apes itself gave it its great subtext. It's about everything is topsy-turvy. Man is, man is not in charge, but it's like the man, it's the man. And it was Charlton Heston. It's, it's the establishment.
But
it's the white man.
Now, do you think it's just African-American? Do you think it was Native American and Chinese, the immigrants in general?
I think the subtext was African-Americans. Oh, okay. I think so. So, but...
Which is interesting, though, because like, I'm from another generation, so when I saw this, I didn't take it as just being one, like, prejudice against one group. I took it as being like a mass veil, you know, that covers like all
minorities,
all minorities, or any time, you know, throughout history.
Yeah, anyone who's been subjugated.
Yep, exactly. Right. And I kind of took it as that.
Racial issues were definitely strong. I remember Martin Luther King was assassinated in 68. This
that's
was
why
only
I said,
4 years right. later. That's it. I mean, Planet of the Apes came out at the time, so
context
it's definitely relevant.
For the times that these are released.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like this week I happened to watch, I saw Dirty Harry down at the New Beverly. And it was great watching it. And Quentin Tarantino was there, and he talked a little bit about it. But he talked about the social context of the time, and I think that's very important, because watching Dirty Harry, you get an idea of. You definitely have to get. You can watch it now isolated, but then if you watch it then, definitely there it was addressing issues about dealing with the changes in society, and this was dealing with the changes in society too.
Late '60s, early '70s,
civil rights,
huge.
So civil rights of
these
all
films
sorts.
Need to be seen through that context. Absolutely.
Well, the interesting thing it helps to see them, but it's interesting to see them now also. I mean, you saw them, Heidi, in a different context.
Right.
Just like I'm watching them as science fiction fantasy, and that's a testament, actually, if it can speak beyond its time. Because Dirty Harry, I mean, you and I talked about it, Tim, dates itself a little bit. Because you get the kind of wrong context. You're
right.
Getting things for the wrong reasons. And I think this being science fiction allows it to step outside of that time. But if you recognize the social context, it gives it that much of, you realize where it came from at the time. Then if it can transcend that to another time, great. Then it can keep on living.
Well,
right.
You know.
Entertainment value, let alone social commentary. But it'd be interesting to take a poll of different generations, different
and
people from different backgrounds, and say, did you sense any symbolism in this movie? And if so, what was the symbolism that you felt it was saying?
Right.
And it could be 100 different
Tim launched his new career.
Because I'm sure like some will be more specific and some will be more broad. I mean, I don't know. That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking that maybe you can look at Star Wars, but I don't think there was anything political about Star Wars. 77 was 77. Yeah, there was nothing, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, the makers of the film might disagree. This was a message.
Right, yeah.
This was
well,
a message.
I guess maybe it was a Vietnam message. I think that's what it kind of started out.
I would agree with that.
But I remember at the time, it wasn't as palpable as I think as this
is. You know
what's
interesting, though, to me, and I was just thinking of this while you were talking about the symbolism of Planet and all the successive ape movies of that time. I was actually thinking about Star Wars for some reason. And because I think that they have something in common, and maybe this is, you know, going like way out there, but I think that their series about fear and like the fear human beings feel and how we let it rule us and lead us to these different reactions. And I think that that's something that a lot of sci-fi is about. And I think that both of those series do a really nice job of illuminating that.
And social change. Fear and massive social.
I think that that's
upheaval.
A lot right at the bottom of that. A lot of times, so
and actually, science fiction is a great way to hide a social change story, which is what these is.
Right.
Whereas Dirty
right.
Harry is not science fiction, and so it is. It looks like it's now, but it's not now.
No,
it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's a cop that you could see. You know, if you leave your apartment, you could actually see this guy. Well, then it becomes a little more difficult to make it a more general comment about society. It's a comment about what you're going to see that day.
Right. Now, one last thing, and then we're going to start the film, but this relays it all back into it.
Right.
Now, of course, they are actually doing it. They're not like they remade Planet of the Apes, which doesn't exist, from 2001. But they're making a film, and it's going to come out, I think, next summer, called Rise of the Apes, with James Franco and several other people, and Andy Serkis as Caesar. They're rebooting it, recasting it, retelling the story of the prequel, whatever. So essentially, they're remaking this film, but without Zero and Cornelius coming from the future type of thing. They're skipping the whole time travel thing. They're just making more of a genetic.
Like it would have just happened the way you probably imagined it would have happened after you saw Planet for the first time.
Right, exactly.
Cool. Yeah. That's really cool.
Which means we get a new remastered, semi-restored Planet of the Apes on Blu-ray for a tie-in.
Oh, I'm sure.
Seriously,
yes.
This is the truth.
Yeah.
It's on
Look
the board.
At that silver
like,
lining.
It's like a 4K transfer. I'm like,
everything you want.
That's right.
Oh, the modern world.
Okay. So on that note, now we're going to descend into Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. So I have in my hand the remote, and I'm going to count down 3, 2, 1, play. And when I do, hit play, and we'll get going. So 3, two, one, play. Oh, I like the music.
Interesting location. Where is this?
and what
actually,
year is it?
No, I think this is down, I think in Irvine. They shot some scenes at a university down in Irvine, and then they shot a bunch of the other stuff.
I thought I was being funny. I thought this was Century City.
No, it's not yet. Trust me. Trust me, we'll be like Century City right there. This is going to be location porn, I'm telling you. Oh, they changed the font. They changed the font.
Oh, yeah,
the
font is different now.
They're making it sound like all crumbly, like the world is falling apart. Yes.
It's all upside down.
It's like the world is falling apart.
Yeah,
now, it's significant for this is now Roddy McDowall takes the lead in the series because before he's been a supporting player. And Natalie Trundy also.
Yep,
again. She's in her third film. Only this time she plays Lisa. So before, I want to mention, shout out to Lou Wagner. Lou Wagner, who played Lucius in Planet of the Apes. He's back. He plays a busboy in this. And I'm just watching this now. I've lost my train of thought.
If this isn't social commentary, I don't
know
what
is.
Is.
Exactly. Yeah, this is so reflective of like Nazi concentration camps.
Well,
everybody because everybody's
Scott.
Labeled, you know, and divided.
Bruce
is Surtees. Bruce Surtees related to Robert?
Yeah, yes, and Bruce Surtees. I mean, one of his expertises was shooting dark. How to shoot grades of dark.
Oh.
Oh, he's very, very good at it. So if you want to shoot dark, you go to Bruce Surtees.
And you'll notice they credit John Chambers as creative makeup design, but
right.
He's not working on the films
I think Dan Stripeek had already taken over for the rest of the series. I don't know. I mean, this is more of, you know, slave labor camps.
And Apjack Productions would be Arthur P. Jacobs. Apjack
yes.
Productions.
Yes. Oh, back to
the masks. Sorry.
Yeah. The masks.
From previous.
But Roddy McDowall. Yeah. No, that's okay. Roddy McDowall he played Cornelius in the first film. He skipped the second film and he played Cornelius again. But now he gets to play Caesar. He gets to play a completely different character who is his father, which is really, really interesting. You watch what he does, what's different. Well, this is why I think Battle is great for him in terms of his role, because that's where he truly gets to be Caesar. Actually, here, he doesn't do as much as he does in Battle. But I don't know. That's what I kind of want to see in doing these all together is get that feeling. I think that's Century City.
Yeah, I think it is, too.
You think that's who?
Century City.
I actually think maybe even that building they were just in on the back end City, too.
There's the...
So, J. Lee Thompson directed this, and he is Guns of Navarone.
Yep.
Cape Fear. McKenna's Gold.
Oh, good. There you go.
Oh, McKenna's Gold.
Turkey Buzzard.
There's some good parts of that film.
J. Lee Thompson has done some nice stuff, though.
He also directed Battle.
He wound it up. He did the last two.
He did the last two.
Huh.
And here we go. Here's the intro to the two of them. And there we have Ricardo Montalban again. Look at that.
As Armando.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember this in 1991. Do you?
Yeah, it was just like this.
I had my pet ape. That's right.
Well, what's interesting is the helicopters, actually, they didn't change that design much. I mean, he's still flying those.
Well, I mean, it was just, you know, quote unquote, it was 20 years in the future, so.
A lot of handheld.
Yeah, but I mean, they shot it in 72.
Well, yeah, but it's 20 years in the future from there.
But I love how, like, Ricardo Montalban doesn't look like he's aged at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He looks exactly the same. Always got, like, maybe a little more facial hair.
He has some gray in his beard.
He looks exactly the same.
He ages very gracefully.
So how many years is this after the last installment?
19. 19 or 20.
Okay. I wonder if Ricardo Montalban knew that his part was going to carry over to the next film, and that's why he took it and had such a limited role in the first movie.
I don't know. That's interesting. I remember watching it and like, ooh, they brought Ricardo Montalban back. That's really cool.
And if you notice, he has a limp, Ricardo Montalban.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
From a four-horse accident?
I forget the cause, but from this point on, he had a bad limp. And by Fantasy Island, it was hard for him to get around.
Okay. And, of course, here now we're getting all the exposition, and he gets to tell him, and because we're here. A little clumsy, but I think they managed it okay.
Well, you know, just in case this was their first film, you know, in the series.
That's right. Oh,
I love how Roddy McDowall looks like he's having trouble doing the ape walk.
Oh, but that's
like,
the whole thing.
I think
he even says that. Yeah. He does have a problem with that.
Subtitles. It's a good thing that speaker's so large.
Ooh, yes, Century City.
Ooh, look, the SS.
Yeah, well, look at those costumes.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. If you read the book, they definitely emphasize about the fascistic aspects of it all.
The fish stick?
Fascistic.
Oh.
Fascist.
Yeah, no. I thought you said fish stick.
Basically, everything's become much more controlled. If you read, you know, the comics, or there was a comic that came out.
Oh, my God, that poor actor. I wonder how long he had to stand like that.
Bow-legged.
Yeah.
Doesn't look comfy.
And now we get, you know, we have Caesar basically getting to see how his fellow kind are treated, because he's been sheltered from that for 20 years.
Right. Must be so weird to have to grow up, you know what I mean, and know that you are intelligent and you can speak and have to, you know, hide that for so long.
Right.
This is a core button for any suppression. I mean, this relates to anything that's being suppressed.
Oh, yeah.
This is not subtle by any means.
Oh, it's no. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it's be able to get away with it by having the apes. But I mean, here you essentially have slavery again.
Yep.
This is why I would think any suppressed minority would take this film to heart.
Oh, it is Century City.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
There's Macy's.
Probably. How did they do that? I don't know when they shot. They probably shot Sundays, Saturday, and Sundays.
The bridge is close.
Well, the bridge plays big time later.
I know, but it's close to here.
Oh, you know where this is?
Yeah, this is over where they have the farmer's market. That's like sometimes I'll go sit on those little benches.
I'm just trying to figure out what the angle is. Oh, okay. I know where that is.
It's one of those big law firms are.
Yeah, it's right off of Avenue of the Stars. Right, okay.
Yeah, they have.
Yes, and then we have, of course, the statue with Fido. No, is it? It's Rover and...
And Cat.
No, I think it's Tabby or something like that. Okay, now in terms of continuity porn, in Escape from the Planet of the Apes, the dates and the timings were completely different, because when Cornelius gives the whole rundown, he says, you know, it, like about 100 years later, the cats died, and then 200 years later, it took a while.
I think because when they came back in time, it shifted, like...
Justification.
It accelerated how fast all these things were going to happen.
You know, I always took it to be that he just had the story, the legends had been expanded and changed. I've never that's
what I always thought.
Ooh, that's a good
you
time travel
thought
out.
About it?
Sure, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I see something that doesn't make sense. I'm going to make it make sense.
Okay.
is that what you think about in spin class, or
when I'm all like zoned out? I'm like, how does Planet of the Apes series make sense chronologically?
Wow. So basically, Zira and Cornelius messed up the timeline.
Right, that's what I think.
By going back, they accelerated. Wow, I just took it almost to be, well, the story got changed.
Now is that? I mean, we have the Broadway in the background.
The Broadway.
Yeah, the store, department the store.
I don't think it's there anymore.
But, I mean, I'm surprised it's even in the film.
Oh, I think they could clear that pretty easily. That's not too hard.
Well, they're in a store right now.
That's Natalie Trundy. Mm-hmm. So she plays Lisa, and we get to see her quite a bit in the background.
The labor demonstration.
And do you
Which
think
is funny, because there's actually a lot of labor demonstrations in Century City all the time.
That's right.
It's true.
Why? I don't know. Yeah, why are they like there?
But always there.
But now I'm going to imagine them all being apes.
That'd be cooler if they were.
That and the federal building. Oh, and they're smoking too. It must be,
and reveling it.
It must be 1991.
I love that. Now that I know they won't kill me. That's fantastic.
Ooh. Caesar's, he made him back off.
He was much bigger than that gorilla.
He made him back off. That's really interesting. He's showing his leadership qualities. He's showing his alpha maleness.
Natalie Trundy came up with a very interesting walk. Look at her walk.
Little step.
Now he's not doing his shoulder. Neither does she, though.
And actually, Caesar is doing a different walk than Cornelius.
Yeah, that's what he's doing, yeah.
Yes.
Which is great for the actor to differentiate them.
Absolutely. Because you know I love the Cornelius walk.
Okay, what is she reading? It's like, oh, here, thank you for this.
I don't know. And I do have to say that blow dryer looks pretty dated. Like, that doesn't look like something he had in 1991. Just saying.
She's picking her for nits. I mean, it's like.
Oh, that's Zelda. What a bitch.
Truth.
Oh, we see her there right now at the lunch.
Yeah, like right at the luncheon.
That's a nice
transition.
Transition. Yeah.
I
was going to use Elysian. Version allied. Oh, that's interesting.
Apes fear fire.
Yeah, they're scared of fire. Wow.
Look at his wide eyes.
This is just a social commentary all over. And Caesar is just, well.
I want to get them.
Caesar's just like, I can't take this. Oh, unfair to waiters. That's what it is. It's the humans.
Slaves, not scabs.
There's always a protest.
Protesting the use of slave labor, actually.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
In a way.
Okay, I totally know where that is. Yes.
So Century City had just been built at the time of this.
It was pretty new, yeah. I think this is supposed to be Aldo that gets beaten up.
Oh.
Oh no, it's a chimpanzee. I know at some point we do see quote unquote Aldo.
So the money came from 20th Century Fox to build Century City?
No, what happened is Fox, after I think Cleopatra had to sell off a big swath of their lot, and they sold it off to whatever developers, and that's what Century City became.
Huh.
Because I'm thinking it's called named after 20th Century Fox.
Yeah, because it was from the Century City lot.
Did you see him?
What did he say? Lousy human bastards?
Yeah.
What did you just say, Jim?
I said, did you see him inject him? It looked like he jabbed syringe through his chest.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Oh, this is where everything goes to shit. 12 minutes in. Oh, look, Caesar is...
This is ridiculous.
That's convenient.
Yeah.
Right. Perfect.
No. And now I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Sorry I got you in trouble, Dad.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It's I remember when Mad Magazine came out with the satire. They had him say fascist pigs.
It should have been that forward ape did it on purpose as a distraction.
Right.
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah.
Because he knew that Roddy McDowell could speak.
But how would he know that?
Well,
just because of some innate sense of something,
protect him,
and he could have seen it, and then to know for the future of the apes, for his cause or something, this guy needs to be, you know, he's our savior, so I need to make a distraction so he can get away.
Right,
that would have been much more interesting.
Well, Caesar does touch on the end, at the end, you know, in the climax in his speech, that basically that the animal, he intimates that animals can probably communicate in ways that are nonverbal, very primal, because he talks about the moth talking, the emperor moth talking over 80 miles, mm-hmm. you know, communicating from one to the next. And mm-hmm. so how do you think apes are not going to communicate? And I think maybe in the same way there's some of that maybe going on.
Sure.
Maybe. Or it's convenient, or it's just bad writing. As in convenient. Oh, look, there's a... look, Elvis. Oh, I'm going to go this way.
How did he find him?
This could be a very...
Well, they just kind of both backed out of the crowd together.
Yeah.
Interesting remake. This could be a very interesting remake, actually.
Well,
the subject matter of this film.
Oh, yeah. But it's interesting. Rise of the Apes, it's going to have a totally different context about what it's about.
So, Serge, I wanted to ask you, what does the Ape series mean to you? What, as a either work of art or social statements, or what is it that attracts you and holds you and has kept your focus over the years? Is it nostalgia versus?
Well, I think it's how it captured my imagination. But if that's all it was, well, I don't know. I think sometimes when something captures your imagination, and sometimes it just doesn't let go. And with me, I'm watching this. I know last time I saw this, I was not pleased with it, and was just like, ugh. When we watched it, it was like, yeah, I'm watching it now. I'm liking it. And maybe it kind of goes back and forth. Conquest for a long time was my favorite one. A long time. And then I was just like, oh, this is so crappy. The production values are lousy. And it just, I kind of went sour on it for a while. And now I've kind of come back. I don't know if it's.
You are fickle.
Actually, now I think with all the ape films, they're all my favorites. It's like they're all my, I like all my children equally.
is this something that has stayed predominantly even or over the years, or has it changed over the years what it means to you? Have you grown into it? Have you learned? Has it become more to you than what you saw when you first saw it?
I think it changes. It's like reading books, you know, after like 10 years or something like that, and you come back to it, it's like a completely different book. I think it depends on the time of your life.
I love how he brings it back to the St. Francis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
So wait, is he being actually questioned by the governor?
Yes.
Of course.
How convenient, because the governor, of course, would be interested in...
Well, why did you say
he... Oh, well, here they're talking about... Because they know that Armando was involved with that whole thing then.
Right,
there's
and that's
a talking
his
ape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-oh. So now they've uncovered the plot.
Really quickly, too, I might add. Like, they got right down to business ASAP.
Well, maybe they're just... Okay, this is maybe a little too convenient.
The recording.
Well, how does the governor have all this information?
Because there's the internets.
And may I say that turtlenecks have always been used to represent the future?
Yeah.
For the most part, in 70s and 60s sci-fi.
Is this why I wear turtlenecks?
I wear
because
them
I represent the future?
Yeah, me too.
Really, it stems from, I will give you two examples. Lost in Space. No, yeah. Lost in Space. Paul Zastavnevich, who did the costume design for that, turtlenecks. And then Jerry Anderson, all the Supermarionation and stuff. If
and
you watched
Space
Doppelganger, Journey to the Far Side of the Sun, turtlenecks. So turtlenecks are always the choice of the future in the 60s.
You are a freaking encyclopedia.
I then choose to live in the future.
Are you a big turtleneck fan? I have many, and I find hard
to
wear them.
I have a hard time finding them now. It's hard to buy them.
I go with the mock turtleneck.
Huh. I don't wear turtlenecks. I've never really been into that.
I don't see you wearing turtlenecks.
Yeah, it's just weird. Yeah. I mean, I've had them.
I sort of imagine more, I don't know, Barbie nail polish and party clothes.
I guess. Maybe not so much.
So this is like swimwear. This is like a... It's like a big exposition scene,
and
Heidi, I think maybe it's a little convenient.
Yeah, it's ridiculous
that they.
Like, how did they have all this information? How long have they been sitting out? They've been waiting for him to just show up there with that talking game.
20 years.
Well, that's the whole thing. Is he's talking about, you know, the rising tide of disobedience, and maybe information is easily available. But exactly. They think an ape talks, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose, and we have to narrow in on it. So,
now that's Don Murray, right?
Yes, that is. And this is Harry Rhodes.
I am evil.
So, yeah, you're getting definitely the idea that the governor, I mean, they rule everything with an iron fist, and they have to control the slave population. Servant population, but they are slaves.
And of course, like, the only one of among them that seems to have any like sense or reason, like, is the African American guy.
Yes, which is brought up later, very sensibly. Now, but it's still in the context of this film, they are giving it to him. They are.
Oh, but I have something to do tonight.
Okay, now we have, I guess.
Oh dear.
Yes, that's right. Caesar is going to blend in with the ape population with a bad orangutan.
We have the conga knockoffs.
The bad orangutan.
The fur just doesn't. It looks
costumes.
Plastic.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's genuine ape fur.
Genuine.
Yeah.
Like, hundreds of apes were killed in the filming of this movie.
It's awful.
Whereas his hair looks completely natural.
Well, that's his full ape suit. I mean, I think that's the only time we ever see a chimpanzee
naked.
Essentially a chimpanzee naked. Yeah. But what's great about this is he gets in there and he essentially brings them to order.
He just starts hitting him on the head.
He hisses.
Turns alpha on him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad they put hissing down there.
Well, that's what subtitles are for. Okay, now that's a good cheap set, I gotta say.
Yeah.
We got the idea, and that was cheap to do. That was a
excellent.
That was a loading dock. Yeah. There's a back of a truck. And he puts screen. Okay, there you go. Ape management. That's right. This is the whole complex.
Wait, apes have managers.
Ape man.
Now, as I recall,
ape management is very important in this film.
Century City had not been opened yet, and they shot this.
That would make sense. That would make a lot of sense because
they jumped on it.
Yeah.
To shoot before it opened.
Yeah, that's sort of like shooting in the BART for THX 1138. They shot in the BART before it opened.
You know what's interesting about this, though, is the way that they color them off is kind of the way that the apes color themselves off in the future.
Right.
You know how they like their outfits are slightly different for each different species in the future?
Right. Well, the chimpanzees are in green.
Right.
The orangutans are in orange. However, the gorillas in the future were in black, and here they're in red.
Oh.
It's close.
But close. So segregation.
By species, yeah.
What's interesting, though, about the movies is saying that they would do that themselves anyway. They would still segregate themselves.
Now, what is this?
Well,
you've got
what?
All the black actors here sort of holding the apes and walking them through the process. It's kind of, I find that interesting. I mean, in the light of the previous conversations about. Right.
Here's our first big set.
Yeah, of essentially now you're seeing how they get trained, so to speak. Now, interestingly enough, I'm not familiar with apes, so I don't know how many species there are.
Many more than we're seeing here.
I guess, but it's interesting that they picked those three, and then they're just focusing on these three.
Well,
I mean, I know
it's
convenient.
They're just the most recognizable, gorillas, chimpanzees.
There are a lot of species that are very small, too.
Right.
I mean,
if they
still
had
considered
baboons, would have been interesting, too.
I wonder how many of the same background actors did all the movies, being an ape.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
They had their usual group, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I like the use of the psychedelic music to kind of
dance lights
to weird them out and to basically condition them, or supposedly condition. What's interesting here is that actually he's leading them.
Oh my god! No wonder they're afraid of fire.
Yeah. How they're basically we're getting a chance to see this training through them leading Caesar through this. And of course, he's outraged.
Can you imagine those actors in those suits getting fire shot at them?
What a horrible day!
Now this gets called back later. This is important because this is where Caesar sees
a way to fool them.
This is very important because he sees how the machine works.
Yeah.
Of course, it's appalling too.
Yeah, it's horrible. God, I just remember watching this movie when I was
younger.
Yeah,
I think that's...
How old were you when you saw this, Heidi?
I guess maybe we were talking about like maybe like 12.
Okay.
Yeah, freaking out about it.
I saw it at 11, yeah.
And seeing this again right now, it does remind me why I'm haven't been so crazy over this film over all these years.
Right.
As something to gravitate towards just because it's emotionally jarring.
Yep,
It's a very unsettling, disturbing film.
They're uppity.
Yeah.
Did you hear that line? They're uppity.
Oh yeah! Oh what! That's an interesting reference.
That's a huge reference.
Though they have had some African Americans.
I love the way he looks at that banana.
And they have the force field on, which is
very Star Trek.
I remember those in 1991. We had those, force fields around doors. Yeah.
Now they're much smaller and much more convenient.
And we had cigarettes that didn't kill you.
That's right.
But not now.
And now he's being.
See, now this is where they could have used a lot more shadow. You don't want to brightly light your bad makeup appliances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce Surtees.
Well, and it's so hard because next to like the really, really good makeup on Caesar, they all, you know, they're just going to look bad. It's better when they're like way in the background.
Yeah. Oh, it looks sharing.
And he and he shares. And now he's basically, oh, that's a great expression. I will give this to you.
And some for you.
Okay. You know what? Now, watching this time, I'm now appreciating Caesar's character more than I have in the past. I am.
Yeah. He's a hero.
He is. And there we have Cornelius.
Who's that actor?
This is Severn Darden, who shows up in Battle for the Planet of the Apes, also playing the same character, Culp.
Okay.
He's famous.
Executed. Oh, that's interesting that they say that he was executed.
Yeah.
Would you say there's a resemblance?
That's a drawing. He's an ape. He's a chimpanzee. Yeah, he looks like him.
What a science they're using.
That's right. Yeah, and the written material, you know, that accompanied the film, they definitely go into the whole...
Now that's a mat.
Is that a painting?
That's
in the very back, yeah.
Yeah, that's a mat. Or a glass painting, actually, probably.
But you were saying before I cut you off about the mat.
Oh,
here's a little Moen ad.
Oh, this is actually a really funny thing coming up really soon. But they basically talk about how all of society has gotten... much more, basically, it's a police state in North America. Much more so. And of course, he knows how to wash his hands.
The actor rolls his eyes.
And I will say, this is not my most favorite music cue.
No. Yeah, the music in this movie thus far is not good.
Tom Scott, who I'm not familiar
Tom
with.
Tom Scott. Oh, look at him.
This is where there we go. He's dexterous.
He's being very fastidious.
He makes an airplane out of it.
That's right. I'm going. That's right.
That guy knew there was
something.
The guard's reaction was
good. Ape. We'll keep him.
Oh, but that's the thing is they want to train them to, you know, to be house servants and to be dexterous and to be relatively intelligent but not autonomous.
Oh, thank goodness he's there to give them guidance and stuff.
Yeah. See?
You understand, right?
This is how you do it.
And how he's communicating with them, just, you know, through looks and gestures.
I really like the fact that they've got a lot of African-Americans in there. In other words, they could have really made the point, but they've kind of blended all that.
Boy, there's some bad masks. Yeah. Look at the back row.
Well, I'm trying not to focus on the bad masks, but look. But if you just look at it,
that shot's good because you have diffused. You have soft background.
Seen this one before.
You see all these apes,
and also
it's from the title sequence.
The sun's behind the building, so it's much better.
Yeah,
not the bright sunlight.
And that white, shot. I don't know what kind of lens it was, but it definitely we lost focus on. I mean, it's like the center was in focus. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, the edges were really blurred.
Lower budget ape lens, which comes in handy for your bad masks.
Very good. See, Surtees was thinking.
This is where he started singing the old bamboo.
Oh, here we go. Four females of arrived for insemination.
How romantic.
Okay, buddy. It's your lucky day.
Oh.
Babies. I was just thinking
now,
I missed the babies.
That's how can they do that?
Mama. What? With the chimpanzees?
How can they? It's a tough sell to go from, look, audience, this is what they look like, and they grow into this.
I bought it.
It's really well done.
You are such a cynic.
In Escape, though.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It's
well
really well done.
If I was really a cynic, I'd point out the fact that if dogs and cats really died, we'd all die.
Because
if all canines and felines come hither on the planet died, we would die.
Did you see the monkey come hither look that she threw him?
Ooh.
Aww.
We need a music cue here.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, well, I like that. Okay, I'll go.
Heck yeah. If you want me to.
It's interesting. No music cue whatsoever.
Right.
March of the Monkey Nymphs or whatever was in the last
Which is what
thing.
They were doing.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, if they hadn't done March of the Monkey Nymphs, then it might have not had that effect.
Bedmaker.
You know, actually, something else that just came up is Roots came out, was written by Alex Haley in the mid-70s, right? And then was miniseries, like 76 or 77. Mm-hmm. And that was a very big thing.
It was beyond huge.
It was the
biggest thing that happened at that time.
Because it was really looking at the African-American experience, especially the whole thing. What I remembered from was the whole the whole thing when Kunta Kinte gets essentially kidnapped and then basically
and then
sold. And this is what this reminds me of. But this preceded it by about 4 or 5 years in a science fiction setting. So here they're saying, we are now going to show the selling of slaves. So that's where this was pretty damn bold. Oh, there's the chick again. What's her face?
All the humans are wearing like black, dark brown.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
The colors and the characters in color, all the animals.
Yeah, this was shot down, I think, Cal State Irvine or somewhere down in Irvine.
So this is not Century City.
Right. So when you have this kind of architecture, that's down in Irvine.
I see.
Or wherever it was. I don't remember. It may have been Northridge, but I think it was Irvine.
I will say, for a lower budgeted film, all they have are masses of people and masses of apes.
I mean,
production wise, you know, you want the less numbers. And yet for this one, this is more numbers than
only
$800.
It's such a bargain. I'd buy a couple of those.
That is so cheap. Well, I mean, I have a Siberian Husky and I bought her for almost like, it was just a little under $600.
Wow.
For a dog.
Well, this is $800 in 1991, seen from 72.
I guess.
My dogs were.
And they definitely should have added some inflation on that.
Maybe it's like $5,000 or $10,000. I think that's.
Yeah. It should have been the same amount as a car or something.
Yeah, I don't know. How much were cars?
I love how the governor goes to the auction.
Back in 72, a car was probably about $1,000 or cheaper. Oh, there you go. Breck wants that one. For some reason.
Well, I think he knows who he is.
He has a suspicion.
Oh.
I just love how he acts the part of the simple chimpanzee.
Right.
How he's really, really good at his writing down this.
He's a really good actor because it's like layered, because you can tell as an audience member that he's an intelligent chimpanzee pretending to be an unintelligent chimpanzee. You know, there's layers there.
Oh, absolutely.
Under that makeup.
Under all that makeup.
And what's great, once again, it goes back to this is where he made the series his.
Right.
Because he hadn't been able to do it. He played his part, but now he's the star baby.
Oh, yeah, because I think, like, up to this point, really, like, Zero was the star.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
First and the third, yeah. And even in Beneath, she was more of a main character than Cornelius was. Let's talk about Don Murray for a second. I think he looks the part and does the part, but man, does he overact the crap out of this part.
He does.
He really does.
Don Murray.
The evil governor?
What I've seen of his work, subtlety is not something he exuded. For what I've seen, Hat Full of Rain. That's a great film of his. If anyone wants to see another Don Murray movie, I think debuted in Bus Stop with Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, that's right.
Such a simpleton around you. You know everything.
He was in Bus Stop.
Yeah, Bus Stop. He was the rowdy cowboy that Marilyn Monroe fell in love with.
But what's his name? Bud or something like that.
Something.
Really?
And then
he looks so different here to me.
This was like 10, 15 years
Advise
later.
And Consent, an Otto Preminger film. He was in that.
It is just
he
awesome.
Had a good run in the 60s.
That's awesome how Roddy McDowall just like he...
And then Don Murray went into directing later in his career.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Great. He did Knots Landing for a long time.
That's right.
Yeah.
He looks like he could have been on Knots Landing.
Who?
The governor.
He was on Knots Landing.
Yeah, he was...
Oh, you said he directed it.
No. He was on Knots Landing, and Tim said that he did direct also.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a recent interview with Don Murray on YouTube. You can see what he looks like in the last 10 years, if anyone's interested. You can search for it.
You know, it's interesting. The governor's just... He's really dealing with his existential situation. If he knows it's impossible, he's got an increasing problem with dealing with the apes and how he knows he can try this and can try that, and he knows ultimately nothing's going to work. Something's going to break down at some point. He's just heading it all off.
Right. Well, and he's also trying to just stay on top. I mean, I think this is really just kind of like a meaningless thing to him. This is just a tool in order to keep him in power.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I think he cares about... Well, he cares about keeping order.
Right.
I don't think he's necessarily, I need to stay so that I can I could be the governor. It's like, you know, if I have to keep this all together, I'm not forgiving him in any kind of way, but oh, Harry Rhodes is awesome. He's just like in the background and and he opens the book. This was real. I love this part as a kid.
So not, opens, yeah. not only is he picking his own name, but he can clearly read.
And I like how he looks. Yeah, it's like he almost gives it away, and he doesn't,
yep.
but he does.
He doesn't.
That's
but he
a
does.
Nice moment. Yeah. I will say that's a nice moment.
And also by then he'd really learned how to work the makeup. We talked about this during Escape, yep. but here yeah. he's like, I'm a master of this makeup. I know what to do with it.
Nice reaction on Roddy McDowell right there.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that
they know.
They seem to see. Yeah, they know him.
They know who he is because they're animals. They can smell. They can smell it.
He's the king.
It's a primal thing.
They know.
He's like,
look at me. I'm stupid. Forget about it.
I'm a playful
distraction.
I'm a
chimpanzee.
I'm a puppy.
Go look. Shiny. Bright and shiny.
I know that spot. Oh, there's stairs there. They moved those stairs down. And I always pass by that stairwell and going, that's in Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. Yep.
No, wait, are we still now in Century City?
No, well, this is a set. Actually, this is a set
there
left over from beneath the Planet of the Apes.
There is a scientific world under Century City.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
The system underground, the tunnel there. That's right. Where yep. James Franciscus and Linda Harrison go through.
That's right. That's right. That they reuse that set.
Yeah.
Well, you know, under...
This is how he learns how to run the society.
He just gets to see what happens. But under a lot of, you know, structures like universities, for example, at my university, there was a series of tunnels that connected the buildings.
Wait a second. That's Lisa, the one who was bringing the book to the other lady?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's just everywhere, isn't she?
Isn't she? Because that's convenient for the script.
Yeah. Apparently.
So, so basically, there were tunnels under the, you know, that connected each of the buildings, and some of us more intrepid, adventurous ones actually kind of made our way into the tunnels and did some investigating. It was very, very interesting.
Fun.
Until the time when we brought more people, and I said we shouldn't, and the other person said we should, and guess what? We all got caught.
Yeah. I will say it's nice to see this in 2.35.
It is.
To see it in widescreen.
It is well shot, for the most part. Severn Darden plays such a good bad guy, man.
I want to say I feel I've seen him in other things, but I'm trying to place him as an actor.
Yeah. I like the fact that they've changed how it looks now. They have the blue in the background because everything's everything been sterile. It's been black and white and gray. Armando's in brown.
Why is he signing that?
Why can't he read?
I'll tell you one good thing that movies taught me when I was growing up is that you don't sign something you've never read. I feel like by the time I was an adult, I just knew that. That was just like such common sense because that device is used in so many films.
Yep.
To trap someone.
Yep. Always to trap someone.
Yep.
Well, everything I needed to know about life, I learned from the movies.
It's true. They raised me.
That's all
better than a pack of wolves.
All life's answers are all life's questions are answered in the movies. That's from Grand Canyon.
That's right.
Yep.
Does it keep coming down on him?
I guess it's like Logan's Run. I don't know. Which this predates. Oh, wow. So it actually does work. That's freaky.
Wow, that's really easy.
That's nice. That's convenient. Here's an idea. I've heard the name Cornelius many times. No.
He does a good job in this
he
film.
Does.
Yeah, he does.
He really does.
You know, Ricardo Montalban does a good job in everything.
Yeah, he's limping really bad.
He was a solid guy. He was a solid actor. I always liked Ricardo Montalban.
He's got a great look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hell no. Oh. Hell no!
Uh-oh.
And?
Something bad's going to happen.
Oh, no!
Ooh. Yeah, look at...
Uh-oh.
And this is how Caesar finds out. And look, and Lisa knows. Or it's bad writing.
But she knows.
She knows.
She knows.
Because they can tell.
And now...
Well, they had a connection.
And now he's completely unsupervised. That's interesting.
Well, now he's lost. This is like Buffy losing Giles.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent reference.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just like that.
It is just like that.
I haven't read number 40 yet.
It's a cold night at Century City. You can see his breath.
Am I going to cry? I'm going to pick it up tomorrow. I'll let you know.
I have it here.
Are the comics?
Yeah.
Buffy comics.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, that's you.
Yep, and he knows that's gone.
Armando's old-timey
circus. Well, that's the thing, is that now he knows... That's all gone. Oh, that's a nice shift.
I also like the soft background. It's nice. Yeah.
He knows it's gone, and now it's him in the city. That was a nice shift, a nice shot.
And look at this. Look at this change, man. This is huge.
Big, big character development moment.
Oh, and he realizes he can't do that.
And he
has to hide.
Pushes his lower appliance in.
That was what he was doing, but he did it very skillfully, and I didn't catch that.
Okay.
And now, so essentially that's, if you will, the first act.
Right.
Which is now 40 minutes in, which is interesting. It's a little... This is actually a shorter film. It's like 85 minutes.
I believe that.
Oh, wait.
Rebellion.
Yeah.
Oh, he's psychically communicating.
Yeah. Actually, no, this is the midpoint. Mm. This is the midpoint where everything changes.
This is interesting. He's causing trouble with his mind.
Well, not with his presence.
It's not his mind. He knows they can communicate without having to use words. And the apes are evolving enough that they can...
I think it's like smell.
They can intuit it.
They're revolting.
Exactly. Well, they communicate through smell.
Okay.
I think they're one of those animals that does that, actually.
This is the guy who played Lucius.
That's Lou Wagner. Wagner.
Yes. Yeah. They did his makeup a little different, so he didn't quite look like that.
Yeah.
Go Lou.
I love how dexterous he is.
Yeah.
He's really proud.
They always had this ability.
He actually wore that mask really well. His makeup was done well.
That's because it's Lou Wagner.
Oh, good heavens.
That's right.
What would you use that for? Cartoon cleaver.
Let's look at these apes are actually, they actually have quite a bit of intelligence here. They've acquired quite a bit. There's no way you could ever do this with an ape these days.
Right.
So clearly there's been an evolution of some sort for whatever reason.
And in what time frame? I mean, since the beginning of the movie.
Since 83. Essentially, they're saying since 83. So basically in 8 years, the apes have evolved somewhat.
Well, I'm going to say in the current time frame of when this movie started,
right?
In its time frame, they have done a quantum leap.
This is creepy.
Evolving in intelligence because what I was watching at the beginning of the movie, they weren't near that intelligent.
Right.
Were they fooling everyone? Were they?
I think
we were seeing some.
And again, I'm going to just justify this.
Go ahead.
By making something up,
please.
That can't be dismissed. Maybe it seems like science has taken quite a leap. You know, between the previous film and this film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they've already been able to develop cigarettes that don't kill you, maybe they're genetically altering
force
these
fields.
Apes to make them a little bit more... because actually having pets that are...
domesticated?
Well, no.
Oh, intelligent?
But no, I'm talking about why can't I think of it? Primates. They're actually really unstable. I mean, look what happened with that Sharla Nash and the monkey, like, ripping her face off.
How did you know her name?
I don't know. I just know it.
Wow.
And they, you know, actually controlling an ape on this kind of level, the way they do in this movie, they're doing it. Even after showing how they've been, like, brutally conditioned, it would still not, I don't think, be enough to get orangutans and apes and gorillas to really behave this way. So
right.
I would say that I think maybe they took some samples from the corpses of Zira and Cornelius, and they used that to genetically alter these apes in order to make them better servants.
Based on the lack of humanity.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Based on the lack of humanity that you're seeing that mankind has in this, it would not be a stretch of the imagination to say they would be in genetic
Sure.
Engineering.
Because they're already more advanced than we would have been in 91.
Well, maybe you.
Which is actually, that's a good point that I wish they had introduced into the film. And if there's a remake, I'm sure they could do.
Well, that's what the whole remake's about.
The genetic stuff.
That's what the film is all about, is about the genetic.
Oh.
If someone's trying to cure cancer or someone's dying, and then they basically test apes, and one of them becomes Caesar because he becomes intelligent. That kind of
which is very topical as far as genetic engineering and tapping into that. So.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think
okay.
they just...
That's an interesting answer.
And cancer's bad.
Right.
There you go.
Okay, there we have it, folks.
That's fine.
Closure.
You know what's really frustrating is when you get to a movie where you can't even imagine it making sense.
Okay. But you probably don't have that problem.
Oh, I do sometimes.
Oh, yeah. But here, you can make the logical leap here. It is possible. And
right,
they filled in. There's enough there going
there. There's
enough
contextual
clues. Yeah. And it's not that much of a leap.
That's an oxyacetylene torch, but he only has one tank there.
Oh, he'll have more. Don't worry.
Star Trek reference there.
Severn Darden is just great. Culp. Oh, here we go. Now they're going to track him down. See that Culp? He knows how to figure it out. Now, how did he know this, that there were no chimpanzees in Borneo? He is on it, Culp.
Yeah, he's on it.
State Security Chief Inspector Culp is on it.
Well, that's why he's a real bad guy, because he's like smart and threatening, you know?
Tim could do that job.
Of course.
Could do that.
In my sleep.
Because Tim is smart and threatening.
And threatening.
Thank you.
That's what I think all the time. Yeah.
But I can.
He knows the entire resume of the director.
So, and now of course, Brex is like, yes, I knew it.
Just as we're watching this, I can see this being very popular in African American urban congested areas that showed this film.
I loved this as a kid. I was just like, wow. Because underneath it all, it's about the underdog fighting back.
Right.
That's what this story is about. It's about. I want to say this set reminds me of Star Wars, but it doesn't. Ah.
The one where they're plotting against the Death Star? Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe this precedes it. You know?
I mean,
I thought, actually, I think the set design for this, for all this, is actually quite good for the budget they had.
Mm-hmm. And I like the shadows. I like the darkness, thank goodness. It wasn't high-lit.
Not all people are bad.
They lit it dark. Exactly. So now, basically... McDonald is like, I am disagreeing with all of this. Oh, he's looking at him.
Well, it's almost when he was saying it out loud, he knew it because he knew Caesar would hear him and understand.
Well, he knows that Caesar understands. He doesn't know that Caesar can talk. He doesn't imagine that he's that it could possibly be true.
He senses he's special.
That he truly has more comprehension. There's Lisa in the background, too. They get her in a lot of shots.
Look at how scientifically advanced they are.
And who's her husband?
He's like... Honey, can I be in every scene in the film? Sure. Okay, fine. All right.
Oh, who's her husband?
Arthur
the
P.
Producer
Jacobs.
The producer.
It's not that she can't act. It's just that...
I actually think she's...
She's
I
very
like
good.
Her in these
she's
films.
Very good. Absolutely.
She's very skilled.
Well, I think they're making the point here. They're setting it all up to know that he has a connection to someone because she's the one who changes his mind at the end. At least in this version.
That's going over the entire planet.
That's a great shot looking down the down the tube.
That looks like something out of THX 1138 to me. Cordless.
He's got a great voice.
That's a nice shot. See, I love that soft focus background.
Now, the nice thing is here is there are no cameras, so it's not like they can see everything and follow and gives you some outs in terms of moving.
Big Brother.
Which we've screwed up now, by the way.
Yeah, totally. Oh, here comes the big reveal. He's looking at him. He's like, man. And this is really well shot. I like
the
shallow
nice
depth of field.
And...
Yes.
And the negative space.
It's okay. You can tell.
Holy crap.
And Mr. McDonald.
And there we have Mr. McDonald
crap.
Going like, he's like, oh...
I like it. This actor did not overplay that. That was a very good reaction.
Yeah. Now this is where it changes for Caesar.
scary.
Yeah, they weren't subtle with the costumes.
No. That's very, to me, that's very Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah,
the main bad Nazi with the guys behind
him. Oh, absolutely. It was very definitely made.
You know,
to be
when
like
you're
that.
Walking down the hall with two people in uniform, like,
and they're doing this,
at your, you know, beck and call, like behind you, that you're important. Just, you know, if that
or you're under arrest.
Or you're under arrest. But if your arms are free swinging, you know that you're important.
And Roddy McDowall did most of this film without dialogue.
Yeah, most of it is not dialogue. This is like this first big chunk of dialogue. He hasn't talked in like about half an hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's the star.
That's something else.
And once again, I think it's great how he changed the performance from what Cornelius was.
And
how
as
distinct.
An actor, he knew the evolution of all the time not talking for this film, not talking, the payoff of what it's going to be when he starts talking and what he's going to do as an arc of a character.
Do you above everyone else should understand that. What does that mean? Does that...
Because he was referring to the fact that
he's African-American.
His ancestors were slaves. That's
Well, and even the main bad guy said to McDonald earlier about how we were all slaves at some point or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, they are acknowledging it. Because up until the point that Zira and Cornelius came back in time, it is our same timeline.
I like how echoey those tunnels are.
I like how much
they scary looking.
Took advantage of the tunnels and did some tracking shots. That's what those tunnels were for.
Yeah.
Got to track through these tunnels.
Absolutely.
Watching this now, I am appreciating the screenplay more.
Mm-hmm.
How this evolves as a screenplay is actually very cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'm constantly dazzled with each successive film that something that wasn't designed for a sequel to begin with.
Right, right.
And what they did with it.
There's the bridge.
There's the bridge.
There's the bridge.
I can't even count the amount of times I've walked over this bridge.
Wait, where's this? Oh,
I know this bridge. It's the bridge that crosses Avenue of the Stars.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, and
nice lighting.
And they're shooting the crap out of the bridge.
Yeah,
man.
They're
shooting it from this way, from that way.
Well, they should. It's an awesome bridge.
It is.
I'm just saying.
Every time I walk over it, I'm looking at it like,
now,
yes.
It seems. Wait, what are these steps?
Oh, that's underneath it.
There are actually steps underneath that go up into nothing.
No, it's just there's an area under there.
Yeah.
What, for the farmer's market, actually, that's the flower guy's right next to there.
Yep. But on the other side.
But I do recall.
Am I confusing the sides?
Mm-hmm.
This was all shot before this area officially opened.
Right.
So they essentially had their own set.
They had the run of it,
this,
exactly, yeah.
For the purpose of the film. What a tremendous opportunity.
Which is great, yeah. Oh, Culp is happy. I've caught you.
Nice rack focus.
You speed him up. You're stronger than they are. Let's do this.
And why did he leave that on his wrist?
I guess it was his identification. But that's
on there?
But that's Bruce Surtees, you know.
I know who shot it.
Oh, no, I know, but no, I'm saying it's that's Bruce Surtees' skill. I mean, how well he was able to shoot it, that's the whole thing. I'm not saying who shot it.
Horrible.
Man. Well, okay, that's changed since then. Yes, torture. Hmm.
It appears now that we do that
because some people seem to think it justifies the ends justify the means.
But you know we've always really done that. People just didn't talk about it.
The recorded word talk now instead of no.
I remember that Roddy McDowall really throws himself into the sequence.
Oh yeah,
because doesn't he start spitting or something by the last part of it, and he's just
now. Yeah. Is he really being shocked here, or is he acting?
No. Here he's really being electrocuted.
Oh, okay.
They've really got the
Do they? Or the I thought the one guy rewired it.
No, that's in a second. Here they are electrocuting him. This is the horrific part. It's just they're really torturing
him. Horrible.
Now, Roddy McDowall is pretty flexible. Although I don't know how old he was when he was doing this, but
it's okay. I'm not a fan of this cutting, but
I don't know. I find it to be really, like, disturbing, actually.
It would, well.
Like, it adds to it, maybe.
Well, you're right. It is disturbing.
Well, I think that's what they're going for. I'm pretty sure.
I just thought it was a bit much. Oh, here we go.
Well,
Interesting. If you look at up inside the mouth, the roof of his mouth, of where the makeup ends and his mouth is actually...
Or they're avoiding it as much as possible. They're like, try not to shoot in the mouth. Oh, wow. They just said it. It's like, wow.
Did we see this actor do other things?
Harry Rhodes, yeah.
Yeah.
He did, I mean, I think this is his biggest role as far as I know.
Nice lighting on Don Murray.
And now they're like, have it say something. Look, he said, have it say something else. You know, it's not him, it's it. And here he knows, you know, here McDonald knows exactly what's going to go, when it happen. Oh. He's still denying.
Interesting line.
He's denying him, I mean, what I want to call, you know, sentience. Yeah. He's saying, I see you're an animal. I see you talk
you're
like me.
Disease.
I see you're like a disease, and you are nothing. He doesn't even acknowledge that he is.
Oh, why wait?
Oh, God, I hate that this line is so chilling. Well, then electrocute him now. Wow.
Odds are Irwin Allen used all those computer panels and his stuff.
I love the labeling of that.
20th Century Fox.
Now, this is interesting because now he sees, you know, it's important. He sees the dials going up. It's like, oh, nothing's happening. I got to give him a show.
Gives him a good show.
And this keeps us from having to really believe that he's dead. Well, I mean, it was a great way of telling the story. It's awful.
Check his pulse.
It's like that.
They don't have one.
Good.
He's breathing.
Look at the doorway. Look at the art direction there.
Oh, I think the art direction is really good in this film with the
very
budget they had.
Disturbing though, with the angles. And
all the angles are
off-putting.
Very Ken Adam-ish.
Do you know what I do love about these films is there's always one person, at least, or ape, standing on, you know, the bad side, is, you know, the evil side, we could call it, that realizes through a connection that they make with the outsider, you know, that they want things to change.
They have a conscience.
Right. That their conscience, it becomes, you know, it becomes more than they can bear, and they feel like they have to reach out. I do like that.
Yeah.
Every single one of the films.
Why don't you just rip that guy's head off? Beat him with his own arm or something.
Well, he killed him.
He just choked him.
That's all he needed to do. He needed to get away, so now he can start the rebellion.
Ratings-wise, at this time, 72, what were the ratings like? I mean, what was this rated, this film?
This was rated GP, back when it was GP, general public, and not PG, parental guidance.
Wow. No red.
I cannot imagine taking my 8-year-old to go see this.
Well, my parents took all three of us.
Were you all 8?
I was 11, my sister was 7, my brother was, I don't know.
An annoying...
4?
Yeah, an annoying distraction to the audience?
Oh, no, he could sit through a movie.
Here we go.
Okay, I kind of like the music here.
Yeah.
Military mutiny.
Yep.
Shaky cam.
I love this. Man, if I saw a whole bunch of apes running at me, I would be scared.
Here's a little clue. If you see one ape running at you, be scared and run.
Yeah, he can rip your face off.
Ooh, so they're going for ape man. Oh, so I see. He's like, we're going...
Start at the top.
We're going right to the core.
Straight to the seat of evil.
That's right. It's interesting. They had no ambient sound there until now.
I find it interesting that they aren't really showing the strength of apes.
Well, I think... what do you mean showing the strength of apes?
Well, I mean, the fact that an ape could, you know, with one arm, right, take a man
I
and throw him
across
the room.
I agree that, because I think in the previous films, they actually did make the ape seem a lot stronger than
this
one.
Yeah, I don't think they really exploit... I personally find this particular scene a little underdirected.
Yeah.
So I think we're seeing that
That's
little
a good
bit
way
of
looking at it.
It is. They didn't...
You're right.
It looks like they came
mayhem
and shot something. Okay, this is mayhem, and we're shooting this and this and this. But how it's the moments are
right. It's not choreographed.
Are worked out. It's not full enough.
Yeah,
I'm getting
some of it. They could have done some interesting stunt work, and
that's the one thing I liked about Planet of the Apes, the Tim Burton one. Any Tim Burton film is the art direction and the makeup and the physicality. The way the apes were physicalized was amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
See, that's funny. Come on, everybody, come in here. And we're going to get you. But, you know, this scene in a way is kind of, it's kind of like the blowing up the mainframe scene when you have in movies that don't really know anything about computers or try and use, use it as a convenient thing. It's like, oh, well, let's take ape management down, and that kind of solves the problem of everything, as opposed to, you know, when you start a rebellion, there's skirmishes. I mean, it's a long way going, but here, this is the way you can tell it in a movie.
Yeah, but I like that. I like that about Caesar, though. You know, I like, it shows that he is moxie. He's just going to go, right for,
the throat.
Right for the throat.
Well, he's basically,
if he wanted to go for the heart, he should have just went for the mayor.
For the governor?
Or the governor, whatever.
Oh, he's going, that's where he's going next.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, he definitely, he wants to take out the method of that they have control over him.
Right, which I think is the smart way to go.
Absolutely.
The best plan.
They need to throw something at this guy.
Yeah. Oh, they're gonna throw something. It's called Aldo.
Throw Aldo on him. Ooh, I got Aldo all over me.
Yeah, this has
some great stunt work. And it is stunt work, that's for sure.
Interesting, that Caesar has this appreciation of the $50,000 concept, which is very conceptual.
Oh, he's as intelligent as a human is.
Right, yeah, he's just as intelligent as any human.
Yeah, it's like...
he was raised that way.
But I mean, to read and to understand finances.
But he knows everything. He knows humans are greedy. Obviously. He knows that they're proper.
He's basically just like a human. He was raised just like a human.
Yeah, but... $50,000 versus $20,000, you know, that kind of thing.
But what he's doing there is he's basically, it's a political statement. He's saying your property worth $50,000 is in danger. Come get it. I mean, it's basically a statement of saying you greedy bastards.
We know what's valuable to you.
Right.
Well, it's not even we know what's valuable to you. It's
we just know it'll motivate you.
Now, here's one thing I remember from the whatever other version is that in this scene, I think he orders some apes that are in command center to be killed, and someone won't do it, so he actually does it himself, and it's pretty brutal.
Oh, the governor does?
Oh, yeah, but it's bad blood effects. Very bad.
Nice.
Uh-oh.
Where you can be easily located.
That's right, by the apes, but that's okay. He's happy? No, he's not. All right. See, now this made everyone happy in the audience. Ape management is in the hands of
you. Cue ape hand to pull announcer out of screen.
Okay, now how did they figure that out? That he was under the command of a super normally intelligent.
Well, it's been established. He said that.
Oh, and now they're just wrapping it all up. That he's related to Cornelius and Zira. Oh, boy.
How did they get this information?
I don't know. I think that's a little, facile writing.
Maybe it was leaked.
Yeah, I feel like maybe
by
Caesar
the ape,
fed
by the
fed
ape
it to him.
Sympathizer. Well, or
Caesar is standing off
the governor
camera.
Is first.
You're going to say this.
sent over some information.
With the right budget, the mutiny scenes could, if in a remake, could be just amazing.
Well, yeah. Oh, but that's what's going to happen in Rise of the Apes. Exactly. They have the advantage of the work that Tim Burton did with the physicality too. So I think that
could visually be quite amazing.
We hope. Andy Serkis is playing Caesar, by the way.
Awesome.
But I don't know if it's a CG Caesar or.
I hope they do it with makeup.
Is Andy Serkis ever going to do any acting where he doesn't have to be covered by something?
Where the poor guy is seen. Oh, look. Here come the troops. Goose stepping along.
Well, remember, this is early 70s. This is when you just had, you know, normal police forces. This is pre-SWAT, pre-paramedic units and all
that. Right.
So So that actually, oh, I like the empty escalator. I always like empty escalator shots. It's all quiet where the apes.
Spooky.
So basically, you know, so basically bringing out troops like that is definitely police state militaristic type of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, you know, it would be riot control, SWAT and whatever.
Well, yeah, now they come out like commandos.
Well, yeah. See, now Caesar's smart.
He has a good understanding of liquid fuel.
They really use these locations very well.
Yeah, they do. And differentiated them. I was just thinking that. Like when they were like crawling up over and then like landing on the bench. That was a really nice shot.
And they've used, you know, Century City is only so big. There's not that much, but they really
made it seem a lot bigger.
Yeah.
So Heidi, I remember
more vast.
I remember you mentioning that what a great day and what a blast it would be to be in the mutant humans that are in the cages. during the film, like on planet. What about Ape Mask and being one of the mutinying apes?
Yeah,
Century
that'd be
City?
Right up there. Yeah. They're about,
you like that?
Yeah, they're about tied, I would say.
This would give you such a sore back,
right,
though.
I mean, all the amount of time, all the night shoots, and you're sitting there with your friends with your Ape Masks, and you're doing this thing. Now we got to torch this building. Now we got to kill this group of people.
Going around and like and causing pretend anarchy, you know, throwing pretend gasoline fluid. Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be a fun time.
Because no's going to work on them? Well, I guess they think it is. I think these apes are pissed and they've outflanked you. Stupid humans.
I like the quietness of their running, too.
Exactly. You don't hear it coming. And then you
soft on their toes.
Exactly.
This was before they put him in boots.
Oh, that's right, because they're going to shoot them. Yeah.
Are these the sacrificial apes?
Yeah, they are.
And don't you think there'd be explosions because they're shooting into gasoline?
One might think that.
Not quite yet. Maybe soon. Hey, I saw a guy light up a cigarette at the gas station yesterday. I was unbelievable. I was ready to just go up and say stop. He had already gone. But he, like, literally, he walks out.
Were you looking for a flock of birds?
I was just
get
like...
Get at the same time, like the birds? Albert Hitchcock movie?
Sometimes, some people. So it's interesting. So we've been set up for this... And he sees all the dead apes, and Caesar is pissed.
Except he's looking at just blank sidewalk because all the makeup appliances have to be behind him.
Right.
Of the apes.
And then go. Oh, it's the old throw the net over the...
And then jump on them with knives.
That's right.
No.
It's that trick. Okay.
Classic. I'll make sure to implement that the post-apocalypse.
That's important. Nets are important.
Nets and knives.
Nets and knives are very important.
Rules to live by.
That's right. You don't need gunpowder for a net.
Nets are so easy to find. Because I have a couple.
Because
where do you find a net?
You just make one.
Oh,
know?
Yeah. They're so quick and easy to make.
You make it out of your hair.
I like the generic phone answering.
Riot control. Pizza.
Yeah. Mean guy. Yes, this is henchman number 4.
Yep. And now remember that, once again, this is two years after Kent State. You know, there are
there's an interesting reference.
Beautiful shot. Well, this is the late 60s. This all refers back to the late 60s with the riots. There were tons of riots. No, what
they
are you
were
laughing
everywhere.
About? But they were. There were
the
lots of
the rebellion that was going on in the 60s?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. Great shot.
Oh, they've got guns now.
I don't know why I find it humorous that they keep on saying no like it's going to work.
Well, because they've been trying to, they conditioned them with that, you know, exactly. The electrodes. So they really think it will.
Yeah. But I just find it humorous. Home. See? I'm with Breck.
What are you, stupid?
Oh, you know when I walk through there on Thursday, I'm going to be like, okay, I just saw this in a movie.
Yep. This is on the MGM side of the bridge.
Yes. And there's Caesar with his gun. Yeah, most of his performance is without dialogue mm-hmm. in this film.
Well, he doesn't really have anyone to talk to.
Yeah, he doesn't. You're right. He doesn't. And that's what makes it great, is that he doesn't have anyone to talk to, because usually in a film you give someone to talk to, so you'll get, this is what I'm thinking. And what's he going to do? Oh, someone has a butcher knife. But that's what they had. Yep. Oh, there we go.
They're organized.
And now they're... Oh, they're still moving forward.
I'm glad this was shot at night.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes the ape costumes much better. It was a yep. very smart idea.
And the mood of the scene.
Absolutely.
And it makes the fire look so much better.
Yeah.
Here comes that awesome Planet of the Apes music.
And the shooting of the guns. No, not really. Wow, that's a lot of guns going off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just indiscriminate killing.
Or shooting. I don't know whether they're killing.
They're shooting to kill. So that's why I'm saying it's indiscriminate killing. Which I find very appalling.
This is weird that they're all the people in the furry costumes have to run by the fire.
What do you mean they have to run by the fire?
Well, all the people in the costumes that are most flammable have to be with the fire in the scene. I mean, they're running around the fire, they're jumping through it.
I mean, those are fire bars. I mean, in terms of the performers, they're fine. There's only so much you can do. And we're getting the sequence. This is another sequence I think that was underdirected, at least that part. Or they just shot a lot of it.
They edited
it into something which makes it feel underdirected. That's the whole thing. And now we're getting to the meat where they're actually attacking the police. Well, the military force.
It took them 20 minutes to go 35 feet.
Well, but that's the whole point. That was the. In other words, they shot a lot of coverage and then they edited it to make it like that. So that's what I'm saying is underdirected. That part was, and they felt they had to extend it.
Right. Oh, hey, they picked up a guy.
Yeah, and the gorilla threw the guy. Okay, I think this is the part where the apes are shot in here. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Apparently smelling blood means kill the humans.
Don't you think? So that's... I think it's in that scene where Breck said kill them.
That would make sense.
I think that they did cut that out from this.
It is a good sequence, though.
It's a flare
though.
Gun. Did you see he was shooting a flare gun?
No, those are just pistols.
No, in the foreground they had what looked like a flare gun, but I think it was shooting a smoke round.
I don't know.
What the? Oops.
I mean, it's for a low budget film, mm-hmm. they really did.
And it's fun to watch how they use the same amount of background apes
to
represent all the apes.
Yeah.
They have a pocket. You're coming up from behind. Supposedly all the apes are over here.
Right. It's actually not that poorly directed. I don't think.
Oh, no. It's not. I'm not saying it's poorly directed. I'm just saying.
Under.
Some parts were under directed.
Well, some parts feel like, slapped together second unit.
Yeah, exactly. It's likely they got that.
But I really do feel like the sequence is progressing pretty well. I just feel like it's nice. It's well done.
The budget apparently was somewhere in the $1,800,000 range.
For 72, that's a lot. That was a lot of money.
I think that's
for 72
for a major.
It was low. Yes.
Yes.
Star Wars was made in 76, basically for $10 million.
Oop, sorry.
I mean, this is pretty. Was that
our first blood?
That was our first blood. That was our first blood. That was a good blood gag too.
Yeah, it was.
Spit take.
I mean, this you have here essentially the slaves rising up against the military forces of the ruling class.
I could see some more people getting killed. Some pretty radical stuff.
We're talking dark sci-fi cycle. So this is the Omega Man. This is Soylent Green. Was how far off? Years-wise?
Son of the Green was right around here, 73, 74.
You know, a lot of dark science fiction happening.
It was late. Culture was changing. Society was changing.
Did they use these same locations in Soylent Green?
Not that I'm aware
no.
of.
No. Oh, okay. No. Soylent Green was... I don't even know where they shot Soylent Green. I think that was MGM, actually. They might have shot it on the MGM lot. Back when it was the MGM lot.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Sony lot now. Or what's left of it on the Sony lot. Yeah, look at that. This is some major...
So we've had a lot of masses. The masses are doing this. The other masses are doing that.
Right.
I need more character stuff, at least.
Right, yeah.
Someone talk, you know, the governor or whatever. What's people, something happening character.
Well, that's the thing. In that sense, this is where it turns into all a whole bunch of, as you would put it, second unit stuff. Now we're seeing Caesar, so now we're back with who we're focused on.
Very Vietnam.
I need
here.
A focus yeah. again.
Right.
They do this a lot, though, in all the eight movies, really. They have these really long... sequences that just don't really cut to anything else.
Well, Beneath, this one, and Battle.
Oh, they're still.
Oh, maybe this is it.
Still trying to correct the apes.
It's like, you know,
how much time are you going to spend doing that?
Get this command center. They're like in this bunker underground, and that's the whole thing. They're in this bunker. They've retreated. Their whole mentality is one of retreat. Yeah, that's not good.
Are they using a cutting torch? Look at him staring at it. What could that be?
See, he says they don't even have the intelligence.
But apparently they do.
Oh, there, here it is. Shoot them all.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a sequence. He actually shot some of them himself in the more extended one, yeah.
Don't shoot the producer's wife.
Yeah, she's not in there, actually. That was established somehow, too.
Oh, really? That wasn't her upstairs?
No, she's not in there right now.
Oh, okay.
See, he says this is the end. He knows it's the end. This is my whole point before, is he...
That was cheesy.
Oh, this is great, this shot.
Climb up on top of the equipment.
Yeah, they're like, you know, humans, we're just killing you. We are just shooting you.
Ooh!
That was
that was pretty gruesome.
That was the Poseidon Adventure shot.
Yeah.
No, but my point before about the governor is that, you know, he saw himself as having to fend all this off, and now he's like, this is all coming true.
They've got him in a like an arm lock.
Oh, there she is. Oh, she's okay. She survived being shot?
So wait, she was in the room
or she wasn't?
She was in the room, so how did she survive? I thought they shot all of them.
Well, no, there was one upstairs, and I think it was her.
Okay, they kind of went around that one. Oh, here's a great part.
Ooh, surprise.
Yeah, really. Oh, wow.
And he's very well read.
So you see, he says before you die, that he plans on killing him. This is Paul Dean talking.
You think?
This is Paul Dean talking about the beast in us. Great little speech.
Yeah, it is.
That was when we hate you, we're hating ourselves, I think. And Dark Side.
And there's your movie.
Yep.
Right there, that sums up the entire film.
That's right, Paul Dean got it in there and gave it, see? He gave it to Breck.
Oh, reconsider. Reconsider.
Come on, Caesar.
No. It's a good look on Don Murray.
Oh, this is a great scene.
Yeah, it is a good scene.
you know, going back to what you were saying, we're having these scenes with Caesar. I feel like I haven't seen him in a while. And the thing is, we haven't seen him in a while. During the whole rebellion, you know, all the mob scenes, we've been away from Caesar. All we've seen is mob, 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 mob.
Feels great to get back to him.
Yeah. So now we get to the out. We get to the essentially the climax of the film where Breck is brought out and Caesar's going to give a speech. And in, this is what they changed the speech, because what they did is they at the towards the end of it, Breck is killed. And mm-hmm. I'll point out the shot where you can see where they actually reversed the film. And then what they did is they had Roddy McDowall come back in, record new dialogue, and then they optically zoomed in so you didn't see his mouth and cut around it and recut the sequence somewhat to make it a more sympathetic ending.
Huh.
Because the ending was not as sympathetic, because basically they kill Breck, and basically it's basically
the original
mayhem.
Was as dark as can be. So
oh, yeah.
The ending.
Yeah. So here they soften it, and it's coming up soon. And here what they do is they're still working with Lisa, and at least now, so now remember this shot here where he's looking out, because they're going to come back to that a little later.
Which to me, a film this dark, you shouldn't pull your punch at the end.
Well, they didn't pull the punch, but...
I mean, for what truly was released.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking original vision.
Yeah.
To me, you should, your payoff should be everything in the kitchen sink if they're going to be that dark to lead up to it.
But they got scared.
Yeah.
They got it was
the
too
suits
much.
Got nervous.
The suits got real nervous. He was like, I was not born human. It's like, that's a great shot. I love his pose, how he holds
the body
himself.
Language.
The body language is fire. So different.
Yeah, it's apocalyptic.
And he gives a great speech here. Dean wrote a great one, and he delivered it fantastically.
Yeah.
Here we go. Because this is where he talks about the Emperor Ma.
See, in a remake, what you would need is a skyline of buildings and buildings going up behind him one by one as he's talking.
Ooh.
You just need to see it spreading and spreading and spreading.
Well, they worked with this very well, because you've got a huge fire bar going there. And then when they get the side shot, I mean, that is a mat shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good, but you get the idea.
I'm just saying, if they're going to do a remake of sorts and have a scene like this, this is where your visionary wunderkinds need to go to work and really make this an operatic sequence of of visual information to take in.
I think this is great. And they're even using a zoom, and you know how much I hate zooms, and they're using a zoom great, slowly pushing in on him.
Wow.
And he's basically
nice
just
he's
laying everything out for them. And how bad humans are, and how he will lead the people from their captivity.
He says, my people.
He says, my people.
Doesn't say my brethren.
He says, we'll build our own cities. He is pissed because he sees humans and he sees that they're not worth it, that the apes can be better. And this comes back in battle also. Because he develops the whole, you know, oh, wow, this is the great moment of your hold right there.
Look at the gorillas. The gorillas are all...
Now, this is where the re-editing has already started to take shape. Okay. Because now they've cut to Lisa, which they may have had in the other cut.
This is interesting. All the gorillas with the weapons.
And now they're looking down at him, okay? And he looks up, and this is a great moment. Looks up at them, and they raise their rifles. Okay, now here, this is a new shot because they cut back to a shot they had earlier. Okay, and then basically what happened is they—I don't know how it went then. I think Caesar starts talking again or whatever, and they basically kill him. They come down,
and this is the retake.
Look, we can talk. We can talk.
She might have said no in it, but he—I don't know if he listened. Or they might have just added the verbal.
This is looped.
Yeah, this is looped, and this is new.
Listen to that EQ difference.
Yeah. And he's just changed his mind. Which, it's a humane message. All this is the film run backwards. One, two, look at the fire. It's going down in the back. Yeah. So this is just, all they ran is the footage backwards. They reversed it, and that's how they did the effect. Even that was reversed, and now we can't see his mouth. so now we have more of a humane message. It's okay. And this is a great shot here. Look at that.
I wonder how Roddy McDowell felt about having to be called back in and redo this.
You know, I read about it. I don't remember.
I think
he did it. I don't think he was happy, but it's like, but he understood kind of thing. I'd have to read back up on it again. But in this version, we do get this great line. We get the birth of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Which, of course, in the theater, we're like, yeah! Which, in the other version, we didn't have. So I don't know what the hell version I saw, but anyway, Planet of the Apes is born. There you go.
I like the music seems to sort of indicate a lack of resolution.
Yeah.
Suspenseful, I guess.
Actually, if you think about it, all of them kind of have a lack of resolution to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the very first on. Yeah.
That's a very nice shot where they dolly into him on a zoom with the smoke going by and he's presiding over everything. Yeah, I mean...
I kind of wish that wasn't
things
happening.
Are not resolved nice and happily. Things go on. And it was interesting that they extended that throughout the whole thing. Longer and you have the screaming of the apes in the background over the credits. Wow.
Has every film ended without music for the final credits?
Have they so far?
I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember.
I don't think Conquest, they've all been quiet to be disturbing.
They've all been quiet. Escape was quiet.
You had the ocean waves from Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Beneath was just quiet because the planet was blown up.
Yeah, Escape was Mama, and then it went to silence for the end credits.
Oh.
That's right. And then here we just have apes screaming.
So that's a stylistic trademark, is end credits without music.
A very effective one.
Yeah, makes me feel a little hopeless.
The use of silence is an underrated skill. And
I agree.
And also the lack of the 20th Century Fox logo at the front of the films, which is uncharacteristic, but I keep on, blaming it on early 70s filmmaking. I don't know. I just like doing that, but I don't know.
It didn't say a fox?
The Fox logo was not at the front of the film. The Fox logo is in front of, I don't think,
oh,
any of the films.
It didn't have,
maybe,
you're right, it didn't have the Fox logo.
Maybe
right.
Planet of the Apes. I haven't seen Planet of the Apes since we did it way back.
That looks like that's a gorilla.
It is a gorilla. We don't know who that is.
Not the right
so, what y'all think?
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes me back.
I appreciated more of it than I have in the past. I felt the second unit ish mass mob scenes robbed it of its dramatic impact at the end. Towards the end, I should say.
Yeah.
But the ending. Last sequence in its original form, I think, is pretty hard hitting.
In this form, it still works.
Talking,
I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. Right. No, go ahead.
But I think in this form that everyone has seen, it wraps it up in a dramatic fashion. But I still think the original vision is much more hard hitting.
Yep. Yeah.
But I still think this one it does its job. It leads us to what essentially the next film will be. That we didn't know there was going to be a next film at this time. It's still, it's hopeful. It shows his, I guess, humanity, and that does come out somewhat in the next one.
I mean, I guess. Anytime you're about to say that, we're going to rule, but with a soft fist, I don't know if that necessarily makes you very
It's almost comical. It's almost comical because he goes total Shakespearean. He's like, and we're going to exist only unto ourselves, and you're going to deny beneath our... You're going
right,
to die
and then all of a sudden he's
our,
like, but if we have to...
it's almost this comical
But we'll do
switch.
It as nicely as possible.
Due to the post-production
We're
going to
do what you
to
did
do.
To us, but we're going to be nicer about it.
I thought it was interesting that...
It goes, black and white, dirty, dirty, ugly, ugly, PC, PC, PC.
Well, it didn't ruin it for me. I wish they had kept it, the harder edge to it. And it is available on Blu-ray, by the way, the Harder Edge ending. But they don't say Birth of the Planet of the Apes at the end. That's the one thing they don't do.
You don't get both endings?
You do get both endings.
Oh, okay.
You can watch the different versions. But what I'm saying, they don't. His line, you've seen the Birth of the Planet of the Apes, is not in that other version. He says something else. That's the one thing I noticed.
Cinematically, it is fun to say Planet of the Apes.
Of course.
At the end, and then everyone whooped it up.
It's the birth of the Planet of the Apes. I went to see with my friend Dean, and we were like, yeah.
It seemed like to me at the end they were really establishing the gorilla's position in the ape culture, because in that last shot surrounding the governor, it was the gorillas all in red, and they had the rifles.
It wasn't the chimpanzees, and wasn't the orangutans. Who we barely
saw. You barely saw the orangutans.
Oh yeah,
which was very unusual.
Actually, we see some in battle, and they play an interesting part, and I think that's where it starts getting back to how they, you know, they were, what their role was in the, you know, Planet of the Apes and Beneath.
Right.
But certainly in this film, the chimpanzees are not pacifists.
No.
Oh, no.
But I think you're right about the, if they had sculpted those mob scenes and some of the more, you know, the environmental scenes a little differently, the whole thing would have, I think, worked a lot better.
Environmental scenes? What do you
mean? Well, the scenes of the apes walking through the... through the culture and things like that. I mean,
I think what Tim was saying, I think it's more of a second unit type thing.
I think
where there wasn't structure to it. And that's what I call underdirected. Yeah.
If you watch it, it's all wide angle. It's master shots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough time for setups other than that, and it feels detached. It feels...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did some setups when they were establishing that there's Caesar and then there's Lisa and he's Caesar and that kind of thing.
Those weren't second unit, though, obviously.
No, that would have been first unit. But they did depend a lot on second unit. And once again, we lost the focus. Like, we lost the focus on Caesar in the whole mob thing, and then he's back. I'm like, that's what I want to see. I want to see
Caesar.
And
that screams budgetary to me, and that would have been an easy fix with a padded out budget.
Yeah, but they kept on cutting, you know, said do more, but you're going to have less budget. Literally, they kept on cutting the budget
each time. Amazing logic.
And this was
making such money off this.
Right, yeah, it just doesn't seem to make any sense.
Just such greed.
I don't think they really knew how to exploit, you know, a franchise back then.
And there was such a disregard for sequels. Oh, it's only a sequel. Oh, it'll go out. Oh, it'll only make money. There was no regard for let's put the money into, you know, to really improve it or just let it maintain its quality.
Well, as what they say, it's not called show art. It's called show business. Mm.
Yeah. Sequels. Speaking of sequels, how many other franchises were there that were so sequel heavy? I mean, we had obviously the Bond films, but. I'm just trying to think of what the
of
what
this
other
era?
Ones.
Yeah. None. This
yeah.
is
I
it.
Mean, this is really sort of it.
This,
this
is, it.
Is the beginning of the sort of sequel thing.
And this is, you know, Bond was a little different because Bond was from books and they kept on adapting the books. It was in a series. So it was similar to that. It was
I
definitely
guess
longer
maybe the
running.
Sherlock Holmes would be just like
yeah,
the Bond thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
Sherlock
different
Holmes
books.
Would be like that.
Maybe at a different
Pink
time.
Pink Panther.
Franchises.
Pink
yeah.
Okay, Pink Panther.
Was Pink Panther before this?
Okay, you're right. Pink
yeah.
Panther.
Yeah. Okay,
which was
so Pink Panther.
United Artists.
That's one that comes to mind.
But not, you know, not many. Not many. There wasn't, like, that big, that interest in having big franchises.
Right.
So.
And so maybe at this time they didn't really, they didn't understand. You know, I mean, they were doing one-offs thinking, well, this might be the last one.
I would say Jaws, as far as coming out, what, 75?
Yeah.
But this was it, the beginning of the 70s. I mean, that's when they first started tapping into that, and that started becoming, more of
a thing, an approach.
Oh,
a business
speak?
Plan.
There you go, a plan.
A business plan. Yeah. That wasn't really the word I was looking for.
Can I just say, by the way...
But it does...
It'll work.
Yeah, it works.
Can I blow a little smoke up? You guys are awesome. I mean, sitting around listening to you guys talk, you know so much. I am like a simpleton by comparison. I mean, just the knowledge that you three have, it just blows me away. I am honored to be sitting here.
I ate the encyclopedia before you came over.
Did you do that book thing like that lady did in the beauty salon? Flipping the pages of some... It looked like an encyclopedia. Oh, there it is.
She's in Mensa. That's right. She's reading the... She's downing
I'm surprised we didn't get to see a death scene of hers.
I know.
To satisfy the audience.
She had... Yeah. Actually, you know what? She had quite a... She had like three scenes where she had lines.
They don't kill any of the civilians, though. In this,
like well, they're very humane.
It's very isolated.
Right, but see,
that's budget.
If I could have done this, I would have had a lot of civilians dying. That would, you know?
Well, as far as the Rise of the Apes, if they go for it,
you're
going to see a lot of civilians get it, I think.
I just happen to have many million dollars in my pocket, so I'm going to give a little each of you to see what you would do with this on your own.
With our own ape film.
Okay, thank you. We'll take it. So now we'll have to venture on to, I guess we're going to have to watch Battle for the Planet of the Apes just to see how it all winds up.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and we'll, I'm just curious what happens in that one. Okay. So, well, on that note, we will bid you goodbye for for this time. And this has been
Jim Eusterman
and
Tim McMillan
and
Heidi Hilliker
and Serge Delpierre. See you next time.